Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome in to Darren, Donick, and Chase, along with D-Mace, here on 102.5 The Game. Another week of action-packed shows coming your way. Lots to talk about. But it's just me right now, along with Elijah Campbell. Wonder what's going on.
Darren's a DNP today?
Darren is out. However, he was able to make an appearance on the Robbie and Rexo show, so everything was fine for their show.
He gave him a Jordan-like flu game performance for that one.
He came out, got it done for that segment, toughed it out, but he cannot go today. He cannot. So we'll have to find out more about this. Hopefully he's back, ready to go tomorrow. But man, I'll tell you what, I can harken back to the days I did. The rule back in high school was in order to play in a game, you had to go to at least half your classes during the school day. So one time I was sick as a dog. I toughed it out. I slept in. I went to half a day, played in the game that night, and I was awful. But we won the game. The next day I go back to school. My math teacher absolutely unloaded on me in the first period. What are you doing? You played in the game last night. I was like, yeah, I went to half the classes. I was sick. Yeah, but you're not going to miss my class. You missed my class? And you played in the ball game? No. She was all over me.
What's she going to do, make you unplay the game
from
last
night? I was like, what do you want me to do? She was tough. She was tough. She used to call me the star man because I would be stargazing often during her teaching. So it was kind of a double meaning. You know, hey, you think you're a superstar? Hey, pay attention. Pay attention, star man. And she busted me many, many times.
See, my problem was always sleeping in class. I wasn't just daydreaming in class. I was actually dreaming because my eyes were closed and I was snoozing.
Okay. So, Darren, I hope you're feeling better. But, you know, he sounded okay.
Did he sound good?
He got through it. Okay. Robbie and Rexo, they were unaware. It sounded a little scratchy, but, you know, got the job done.
So if they didn't know, then he had to have put on a pretty good performance then. If they weren't just like, oh, my God, this guy sounds so sick. What's he doing on the air right now?
So we will press on. We will soldier on. No D-Mace today. He'll be with us tomorrow. The suit. We're going to call in the suit a little bit later in the show. Chase McCabe will join us. We'll have a lot going on. We've got our regular crew. We'll talk. Look, we got a little Nashville SC. They had an interesting contest that had some weather issues over the weekend. You had SEC baseball finishing up the regular season. You've got the NHL and NBA playoffs going on, baseball season at the Major League level. So a lot happening, a lot happening. So, Elijah, we'll start with you. Unfortunately, not a whole lot of drama on the NBA front in the Final Four. I was hoping for some.
The closest we got was the Boston-Miami half of the game, because both those teams have done a really good job of taking turns beating the hell out of each other. Like, I don't know if I've seen a series in which each quarter almost is dominated by one team. And it's funny because the Heat are 2-1 in the series, right? They've won a grand total of two quarters.
Wow.
Of all those. Only won two quarters, but they've won both of those by 20-plus points to give them a cushion to be able to maintain for the rest of the game. But that game Saturday night was just weird. They got up 26, almost gagged away a 26-point lead, and then made it anticlimactic in the last 2 minutes. But that's the closest we've got to any kind of real drama.
Yeah, and that was the most interesting game.
Yes.
So, and meanwhile, in the West, I don't know how you feel if you're a Grizzlies fan or, you know, you're disappointed at the end of the Grizzlies season, but the Warriors now up 3-0 against Dallas. Big road win for them.
And I think what we saw, probably the dunk of the season in that game too. I don't know if you saw what Andrew Wiggins did to Luka Doncic, but it was wrong and immoral. I mean, and the worst part was that, like, the official called a charge on it, and I think they challenged it and they eventually overturned it. But if you haven't seen the dunk, what Andrew Wiggins did to Luka Doncic last night was probably the main highlight of these two series so far. That's your entertainment value in these two right there.
So it is looking more and more like Steph Curry and crew will get back to the final. And that will be a pretty dramatic story here, just looking at, you know, historical types of things when you start chalking up going to the finals a certain amount of years with one team. That's going to be pretty interesting. So it looks like Dallas is in big trouble. Meanwhile, in the NHL, Connor McDavid, holy cow, next level. You know, thinking about LeBron, Michael Jordan, it's harder to do it in hockey, but if there is such a thing in hockey, he is taking, like, we're talking about best player in the game at the time, taking his game and putting his team on the shoulders. That's what he's doing right now. It is amazing to watch. And he teed up Evander Kane perfectly, and Kane took it from there. A natural hat trick for Kane, and the Oilers take a 2-1 lead. That series, now, we just talked about the NBA. It's lacking a little drama right now, unfortunately. The NHL is not.
One series has enough for both NBA and NHL. That series has everything.
It's got great theater. It is great theater, and I think it's got some more chapters to go there. But if you haven't been watching that, wow, it's worth it. Even if you don't know much about hockey, just watch for 5 or 10 minutes, and you'll notice Connor McDavid. You'll notice him.
Did he assist on every single one of those Evander Kane goals? I think he.
I didn't know about every one, but he's got I think 25 points already
in the playoffs.
So
I think 17 of those are assists.
So yeah, it's not like it's not just goal scoring, but it's just every time he has the puck, it seems like something's going to happen. Something you can't stop him. It's like you've got to be holding your breath if you're Calgary.
It's where the ultimate entertainment value is, though. Yeah. Like you mentioned, it's like almost LeBron James-esque. The ball's in his hand, and everyone is watching. You don't want to take your eyes off because you don't want to miss what's about to happen. Same thing with Connor McDavid, too. I mean, he's the most physically imposing player on the ice at all times, and anytime the puck is on his stick, you know exactly something's about to happen, and something exciting is about to happen, too. He's just bigger, faster, stronger than everybody else on the ice. And for the first time in the playoffs, really, I think we could say that he actually looks the part on this stage.
And he is only 25.
He's been playing.
I think he just turned 25. He's been playing since he was 18. So there's like, when are they going to win? They've got McDavid. Are they going to miss their window? He's still, you know, in his prime, will be for a long time. It's pretty remarkable. And look, I got to say, in the middle of the season when they hit the dip, remember they fired their coach. They couldn't buy a win. They went something like two games in a month, or maybe in a month and a half. It was a real struggle.
That was when Leon Draisaitl and that reporter had that really awkward exchange that really, like...
Yeah, why are you getting so... I hesitate.
Yeah, it's borderline SEC compliant, but it is, yeah. Why are you so angry, Leon? Yeah. And then they had like that very uncomfortable back and forth.
Very uncomfortable. It wasn't that long after that they started turning it around. But around that time is when it seemed like a desperate move. But they took the gamble and signed Evander Kane, who's got all kinds of issues off the ice.
You used the word gamble there. Yeah, I don't know if you intended that pun or not, the gamble with Evander
Kane. I didn't, but it does work, doesn't it? It doesn't. He's compulsive gambler, bankrupt, owes a lot of people money, all kinds of COVID violations, basically told to stay away by his former team, the Sharks. They were like, look, we'll be better without him. I don't care what he is on the ice. Keep him out of here. And they did. Still don't know how much money they're going to owe him against the salary cap, but the Oilers snapped him up for no money, basically, very little money, and he's been the perfect fit.
Yeah, no financial risk and an incredible reward because he's been awesome in the playoffs. Yep. I mean,
and this has happened in sports before. You take a guy who you buy low because of a lot of other issues, and it's kind of a gamble. It's a PR gamble, but to his credit, Kane hasn't had any issues since he's been there. There was never any issue about whether the guy could play. So he has been exactly what they needed, and they've got a 2-1 lead in the series. Meanwhile, Igor Shesterkin is trying to be the guy that just carries his team. They gave up 43 shots, I think, yesterday, won the game, got back in the series. And so this is what an elite goalie can do when he's on his game. He wasn't even that great in the first round, but it looks like his game's rounding into form, and it's a good thing because they're not the better team against the Hurricanes. But the Hurricanes have got a little weight on their shoulders. They haven't won a road game in the playoffs yet. They've been lights out at home, 6-0, 0-4 on the road. They're still up 2-1 against the Rangers, but that series took a nice turn. So now we've got a series there.
Yeah, and Shesterkin's played a lot better at home, too. I know he struggled in that first playoff series, which I believe was his first one of his career, right? I don't think he's played in a playoff series, an actual playoff series before then. So there was that obvious like wall that he hit. But when he was at home in that series, that was when he had that triple overtime game against Pittsburgh where I think he recorded like 73 saves and a loss, which is pretty remarkable.
That
but
was.
He's different at home. Like his like playoff struggles this season, I feel like were mostly on those road games, but he was lights out yesterday.
And then finally, the Tampa Bay Lightning. Just keep on doing Tampa Bay Lightning things, playing like champions. They have just got the number of the Florida Panthers, who average over four goals a game during the regular season. First team to do that in over 20 years, I think. Yeah, maybe 25 years. I think 95, 94, somewhere in there.
It's
the Yager Lemieux Penguins were the last team to average four goals or more for a season. They've got three goals in this series so far against Tampa. They can't buy one right now. Tampa has just got the lockdown.
Does that make you think Vasilevskiy's still the best goalie in the NHL? I know Shesterkin had this historic season.
There's no question. He's the best.
Yeah.
I think Shesterkin is an up and comer. He may win the Vezina this year, but the best goalie in the world is Vasilevskiy, and he's locked in.
It's right weird. The Lightning are one of those few teams in this year of pro sports that can just go on cruise control for an 82-game regular season, and then the playoffs turn on, and then they are who they are again. That's the remarkable thing to me, because there's so many times this year I was like, okay, the Lightning can't three-peat. Like, it's taken a toll on them. They've played so much hockey in the last 3 years that they're going to have to hit a physical wall, right? Like, you can't just keep getting away with this, and they keep getting away with it.
They do. So Tampa's in the driver's seat. You've got the next chapter in the very spicy Colorado-St. Louis series, where you got Nazem Kadri, who is public enemy number one with the Blues fans. Of course, I don't think it was a bad play. It was a legal play, but he took out their goalie, Jordan Binnington. He's out for the playoffs, so it'll be Ville Husso. And, man, you talk about there's going to be some hostile treatment of Kadri tonight. Every time he touches the puck, just he knows it. It's coming. But he played a great game, and they went up 2-1 in St. Louis. So that's going to be good, good action tonight. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll keep the show rolling. We'll get Chase McCabe involved, and we'll crank it up here on this Monday, here on this action-packed show, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Back here on the show, here on this Monday, coming up at 11 o'clock, Tehran Davenport. We'll be talking with TD and TV, maybe about TV. No, that's TD. And then at noon, we'll check in with Vince Ferraro over in Knoxville. University of Tennessee remains number one on the baseball field as you head into the SEC tournament this week. Meanwhile, Vanderbilt was swept at home, a rough, rough weekend against the LSU Tigers, who are now surging. So a lot of drama for the Commodores, not in a good way. Tim Corbin, very emotional this morning with his media coverage, and not surprising. We'll see how they respond after maybe squandering a chance to host in the first round of the regionals, which we've become accustomed here in this market to seeing them host regionals year after year. That may not be the case now after losing three in a row, even though they have played a brutally tough schedule. Maybe, actually, it's right up there, I think, in the top three in the nation. But their fate will be learned a little bit later this week, and we'll see how they perform down in Birmingham, Hoover, more specifically. So, with that in mind, we'll have Chase McCabe joining us in the next segment or so. So, Elijah, as we take a look forward here, it's interesting to watch as we move forward here in the NHL season, because everything I'm watching, I try to watch through the lens of, how close are the Predators to what we're seeing in terms of winning in the playoffs, because that's got to be their entire focus too. Because as they try to inch forward with their personnel and all the tough decisions that we have chronicled, and we went back through a ton last week, backwards and forwards, went through their entire roster. It's interesting. I tried to mentally look at, you know, what teams could they match up with? Are there teams right now in the playoffs, you know, playing well that I feel like the Predators could match up with? And it's a hard question to answer because we just talked about in the last segment, Edmonton. During portions of the regular season, they look like a very, very ordinary team. Very ordinary. Now here they are with a 2-1 lead in the second round. 2 wins away from getting to the conference final with a 40-year-old goaltender. It's really interesting to think about that. Mm-hmm. So I guess where I'm going is, and then, you know, on the flip side, we just talked about Florida. Lights out regular season.
For the entire regular season.
The entire regular season. Dominant, particularly at home. Added personnel for the playoffs. Seemed to have everything you would want for a playoff run. Same thing with Minnesota. And Minnesota is out. Florida is down 3-0 and having to play on the road. So it's a really tough needle to thread. It's a fine line. Now, in fairness, the Predators are a few pieces away. 2-3, I think, realistically. But I think the right 2 or 3 could close the gap. But then it becomes, how do you play during the playoffs? How do you play during the playoffs are different. Everything is, winning in the playoffs seems to be slightly different in formula than the regular season. But how do you explain guys like Nick Paul? Like there's a, you know, we talk about Tampa Bay with all their great stars. Who is a guy that's making a difference for him? Nick Paul, who is an acquisition during the trade deadline or a little bit before the trade deadline, a guy that they picked off from Ottawa. Be honest if you're out there listening. Have you ever heard of Nick Paul? But Nick Paul has been the perfect fit. So sometimes you just never know what that ingredient is going to be that helps you get through in the playoffs. In 2017, the Predators seemed to get the right guy in at the right time in the big moment. Vern Fiddler had a big moment or two. Cody McLeod had a big moment or two. Harry Zolnerchuk had a big moment or two. It seems like if you're going to win, you got to have that combination of enough horses to push the envelope and produce, but then you have to get those contributions from those wild card guys, and you never know who the right guys are. There are times where you acquire what seems to be perfect fits, and then they go and they don't do anything in the postseason. You go, why did we give up all these guys to get this guy? He didn't do anything. And then all of a sudden you see a Nick Paul, and you're like, man, that was the difference maker.
That's big. Well, because like when you play these teams like in the regular season, like what did the Avalanche key in on in the first round against the Predators? They knew that the main goal scorer is going to be Philip Forsberg, Matt Duchene. Like they're able to key in on a lot of those guys because they've also played them, what, 3 or 4 times during the regular season too? And the Preds got the better of them on almost all of them. So they had a really good film on what the Predators can do on the, like, at their best against them. So then you kind of have to have those guys step up. And the Preds almost did, with at least in Game 4, with Yakov Trenin playing the game he played. And he had a really good series, but it takes more than that one guy, right? And I think the Preds needed 2 or 3 other players too, because when you're not getting a goal from Philip Forsberg until the third period of Game 4, it's going to be really, really hard to win that series or even be competitive in it if you don't have those other guys, or the Nick Pauls, as you would say, step up.
Sure.
Guys who are, you're not paying them to be your big contributors, but in the playoffs, where things get really different, is you're not sneaking up on anybody at that point. You have an 82-game sample size of every single team you're playing, and you're going to have guys who maybe not were great contributors in the regular season, or maybe weren't relied to be big contributors, to be able to give you something. And I still think the Preds had enough of that.
They definitely didn't. And I heard Robbie and Rex Road sort of evaluating the roster up and down. And I'm thinking to myself, the way that everybody, not just them, but it seems like everybody that's doing a deep dive on the roster right now, you're holding them to the standard of how do you match up with the absolute best of the best. And that's probably a good thing, because if you, you know, it's that there's that sting of just getting overmatched in the first round. But remember, the Predators didn't try to add. They didn't load up at the trade deadline like almost every other team did in the playoffs. They added some pieces. How much would that have helped in the assessment of the Predators at the time? Not enough, or else they would have done it, right? But they saved the assets for the long term and tried to hold those assets to try to be better down the road. But I kind of like knowing that here's how you know you match up with the very, very best. Because even if Colorado loses, they're right up there. You see what the top level looks like, especially with Colorado. I think St. Louis is a really, really good team. They're awfully good. We know how good Tampa Bay is. They are the standard, and they are knocking out Florida. Carolina is really, really good. The Rangers are young and I think overachieving a little bit, but they've got the goalie that's the equalizer. They're going to be scary over the next few years.
The goalie that can steal you series. That was the thing we thought about Saras, too, was he can maybe just get into the playoffs, and if you have him, he can steal you a few games in a series enough to make it competitive. And I think we saw when he wasn't there that you're not competitive.
And I believe that that can still be the case. And I think that might be the best thing when you're looking for hope, when you're saying, how do you get there? How do you put your team in position to be able to win some series and make a run? That's where you start. That's where you start, is UC Saros. And to their credit, you did not hear them in their press conference last week talking about, well, if we had UC Saros in the playoffs, it might have been different. They didn't go there. But that's an obvious thing. They went from having a superhero between the pipes, which he can be, to Clark Kent in there. You know, I mean, no offense to the guys that were there, but it was a massive, massive drop off. So mm-hmm. I think, to be fair, when you're looking at the high, you know, raising the bar to the highest level, you've got an elite goaltender that can close the gap. So all of that to say, as I watch these games, I find myself watching a lot of times in past years. I think when the Predators have gone out, I've almost had to take a step back and not watch for a few days. It just, but I don't know why. I'm just really curious to see how this unfolds. It's been great drama. It's been really exciting to watch. I think the coverage, especially on TNT, has been awesome. I find myself really wanting to hear what the guys have to say during the intermissions. I just think it's been awesome.
The coverage has been awesome, yeah. I mean, they've TNT especially. I know our pal Max Hurst is a big fan of the TNT coverage, but they've really done a good job. And ESPN did a really good job. I was watching the Kevin Weeks segment where he's talking about goalie play, and they had him in between the pipes or whatever, like actually doing like a mm-hmm. demonstration. It was really, really neat. Like ESPN's upped their game too. I know it was kind of rocky at the beginning of the year, but they've upped their game a little bit.
Yeah, it's still got a ways to go. To me, there's a big difference between a TNT game and an ESPN game, but they have gotten better, I think. Hopefully that continues to be the case. All right, when we come back, we'll see if we can get Chase involved in the discussion, and we'll move forward. Don't forget, Teron at 11. We've got our Tennessee report with Vince Ferrara at noon, and that's when we'll get into some SEC baseball stuff to set the table for what's going on in Hoover this week. So we've got a lot rolling here. Stay tuned. You're listening to 102.5 The Game. A pretty fascinating answer last week from John Hines chronicling the stages of the season. He broke it up into quarters. And that did get me thinking. It's sort of picking up on where we left off in the last segment, trying to evaluate how far you are from being able to compete with the best teams. So how did the season end? Well, they weren't playing their best hockey. It was probably the worst of their four quarters, as you heard John Hines say. And then you lose your goalie and you get smoked in the playoffs. So the lasting impression, as we went through last week, holy cow, it was a firestorm. People saying, hey, not good enough, all of this stuff, trying to evaluate what's fair. And I did think this, Elijah, at one point, if it had gone in reverse, like that, they ended up with 97 points, right? 97 in a season where the over-under in Vegas was somewhere between 83 and 86, right? Like, if you looked at every – I mean, I I looked at this before the season started. There were tons of prognosticators, and I won't go back through the whole thing. Nobody predicted to make the playoffs, but the over-under in points was around 83 to 86 by most measures. Analytics, people just taking a shot at it with their hearts, their heads, you know, without looking at numbers. That's about what the expectation was. They ended up with 97. But as John Hines just chronicled, they started 1-4, and then from about then until after Christmas on into January, they were really, really good. They were overachieving.
They hit a big stretch.
Yeah, they were fighting for second place in the Central, which, you know, seemed like it was attainable at the time. And so I think, in fairness, in retrospect, they were probably overachieving there, even more so. But, you know, it's hard not to get caught up in that some, and maybe you think you're actually better than you are.
Yeah.
But as they said, so I was wondering, like, if they'd have gone the other way, if they had had a really poor start, like they did the year before, in, of course, an abbreviated season, and then finished strong, would you feel any differently about getting to 97 points? I do think just the way it ended leaves an impression that the team wasn't very good. And I think the key thing is John Hines talking about why they think they didn't finish strong. And I think the biggest thing is, you know, they've got to take their own responsibility. Their ability to shut teams down and play a really strong defensive structure, they lost some of that down the stretch. However, I do think there was some young guys that hit the wall. I also think that maybe UC Soros wasn't at his best for one reason or another, maybe because he had to play more games, etc. It was also by far the toughest part of their schedule. They played a lot of games in a short period of time against extremely tough competition. So that had something to do with it as well. But they got into the playoffs with 97 points. So
despite falling backwards into it almost at the end of the year. Because they
and that's the thing. Can you really fall backwards when you have 97? Like, you know how many points they had when they went to the finals in 2017?
Oh, they had less, didn't they?
They had less. Yeah. They had 94.
But that team was also playing a little better going into the playoffs. Well, they ended the season so bad to where I thought and that's not what they actually are either, right? Even when, like,
in 2017, they were in January. It was the opposite. You know, they were struggling in January. They couldn't figure out how to get it in gear. And then from January on, they built up to where, even though they only had 94, I think it's 94 points when they made the playoffs, they kind of knew they would be in the playoffs about a week or so ahead of time. Like, they still had a little runway. They got in. So every year is a little bit different. So it's tricky to look at the points because there's a lot. Some years there's more 3-point games than others. Some years there's some teams like this year where it's a little more top heavy. There's bottom feeders
that go on
because there's some teams that completely tanked.
The middle so class of the NHL is very sparse.
Yeah, so that's going to push the point total up a little bit. So you do have to keep that in mind. But I do think it's interesting because the last impression was they put their worst foot forward. That's the lasting impression going into the offseason. So you try to be fair with a full evaluation.
Well, that's what makes evaluating this team so tough, right? Like, even you said, when they were playing their best in about the middle of the season, when they were in, like, honest contention for second place in that really tough division, they might have been overachieving a little bit. And then at the end of the season, as, like, they played really poorly to end the regular season, but I don't think that's exactly what they are, too, because there was a lot of players that were hitting the wall, as you'd say. Like, I went through it on the 6th on Friday, how many young players in the months of March and April that were really productive before then just stopped producing. And, like, Tanner Janot's a prime example. I think he only had 1 point in his last 25 appearances as a Nashville Predator. And, like, he hit a wall. Either hit a wall or he fell back down to earth. And that's where evaluating this team is. Did they hit a wall, they fall back down to earth, or are they averaging out? I think the real Nashville Predators is somewhere, like, in the middle. They maybe not have been as good as they were when they hit that number 2 point in the Central Division, and I don't think they're as bad as they were whenever they got swept and they had that stretch at the very end of the season when you're getting 5-0'd or 3-0 by it to Edmonton at home, and, like, when you play the other teams that in this league that are really, really good, and you saw a little bit of a gap there. I don't think they're as low as that, but I don't think they're as maybe good as they were when they reached second in the division about midway through the season.
That, I think that's a really interesting thing to look at, because they played so many games against the best, and there were some games that were eye-opening where they didn't bring much to the table, like the game where they gave up 7 goals in the second period to St. Louis. Mm-hmm. They got blitzed down at Tampa.
Buffalo game, like games like Buffalo and Philadelphia, I feel like they lost teams they probably should have beat, but like there's the fatigue factor too that we talked about. Like part of like an 82 game regular right. season is you're going to see those teams, and you can't like take your foot off the gas pedal just because you're playing the Sabres. And even though the Sabres actually played pretty well towards the end of the season, you should still be beating those teams.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like where the team started to struggle then. That's when it kind of became alarming to me that they're not hitting their stride probably at the right time.
But I guess I try to flip it around a little bit and say, despite all of that, they ended up with 97 points. So that's still, to have all that happen and still end up with 97, don't lose sight of the fact of all the good things that they did to build up. The key is how can you avoid having those young players hit the wall? Will having gone through it serve them well next year? That's what you have to hope for. And again, this is a woulda, coulda, shoulda. If they had just hung on against Calgary for 1/10 of a second, and we'll never know. But I still maintain if UC Saros hadn't gotten hurt, they probably end up with 100 points and are playing Calgary in the first round. And who knows? I think that would have been a little bit of a different story. And that's not some fairy tale. I really don't think that's a huge stretch to say.
But at least been competitive in that.
I think it's going to look different. It's going to feel different than it does today. But I'm hoping as they move forward, it's still a good thing, because when you get exposed and your weaknesses get exposed, maybe that drives you even more to say, not to err on the side of caution, to say, okay, we've got to make sure we address, to not put too much faith and overestimate what you're going to get from your current group. I think that's maybe the silver lining in having it end the way that it did. That's what I have to hope for. And remember, they didn't add anybody that could give them the lift. They didn't make a trade other than Jeremy Luzon, who got hurt after that. I thought he was, he's not the kind of guy that's going to score a bunch of goals. So he wasn't going to be the Nick Paul or the Max Domi or some of these guys that you're seeing who were the right guy, right time.
His impact would have been had to have been felt elsewhere. It had to have been felt and just taking care of the
and
puck.
I think he played pretty well, but his future is yet to be determined. I do think he's a guy that is an important piece going forward. They need to get some mileage out of him, and I think they will. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get Chase involved in the discussion. We've successfully made it. We've successfully made it to 10:43 without the suit. Hey, Chase.
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
You guys have done a fantastic job.
The building is not on fire yet.
No.
Well, that's good.
All right.
That's good. I'm here. I'm ready to rock.
Okay. Chase is ready to rock. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more. The DDD. The DDD? It's the 3DC is what I meant to say. I feel like that's where the show is going. You know, there's no T-shirts yet. But the 3DC is my vision.
You like that?
The 3DC. It's just so clean.
Okay.
Even though I just butchered it a second ago.
I will take it under advisement.
Okay.
To the committee.
You are the committee. I think you can get... You can get things done.
I'm not the committee. I wish.
All right. But we're down a couple of D's. We have no Derek. We have no Darren.
Yeah.
What's the health report on Darren?
I don't know. I got the warning last night that, he could have to be on the IL today. And sure enough, he is. I heard him make the appearance on the morning show.
Yeah, what did you make of that?
I mean, he was a little hobbled.
But he got through.
He got through it, but I don't know.
And he couldn't give us anything on his own show?
I guess not. Man. So, but I have not gotten the full health report yet.
Should we read into this, Chase? If you look across the street, have you noticed this? We got like this family of buzzards.
Oh, they've been there since Saturday.
Yeah. No, they were there Friday.
They were there Friday.
Okay. Must have missed Friday.
I mean, is Friday the first day? Like,
do you know what they've been doing? Like, have you seen what it
tell.
Is?
I can't tell, but I feel like maybe that's a sign.
Well,
that they're closing in on on us. Is that, are we next?
No, because I think it's going to take him another week to get through that deer. So,
and you know why they're not going to come for us, Willie? Because we have a pulse, and that poor deer down there has not.
No,
for a hot minute.
No.
That thing is long gone.
But
Saturday was the feasting day.
But we don't need to worry about Darren or anything over there. Darren's not going to end up over there with the buzzards, right?
No, he'll be fine. Craig on our text line.
I mean, those bad boys are hanging out. They have set up shop over there.
They are. Craig on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Darren, Donick, Mace, and sometimes Chase.
See, there's a lot. It's kind of busy. That's good. It's got a good ring. But just to be concise, I still think 3DC covers it out. Covers it all.
Yeah, but I know you guys have been talking Preds and kind of what's next.
All right, so this is where Elijah and I have sort of started the conversation today. As we're watching these playoffs, and they're dramatic, and everything gets intensified as you move forward here, it's easy to kind of think, oh, man, you're nowhere near. But it's a complicated thing because it's a salary cap, and some of the things that happen are just not predictable. Like Florida, average over 4 goals a game, and they can't score right now. How does that happen?
That series is unbelievable.
Were they just not as good as they appeared, or are they just not playing well, or are they just running into a historical team? All of those things could be true. The debates, the discussion, I'm sure, in their circles would have to fall on those lines. And that's what is so compelling about the chase for a championship. We went through it with the Titans, but to me, that's what makes sports great, is because there's no one answer to everything. But give us your crack at as you watch. And we just the context we used in the last segment was because the team did not play its best in the final quarter of the season and in the playoff series, I think it almost skews the big picture of how solid the season was and what is the real answer for how close you are to the elite teams. But I think we all, no matter how you look at it, there's a gap that they've got to close.
I think, and here's the hard part in all this, and this is, you can pull a positive out of this too, because, and David Poile actually talked about it on the recap show, because Hal asked the question of, you've now seen this fan base evolve into a fan base that they care. I mean, and they're mad. And when things aren't successful, they're upset. And that's a good thing. That means they're invested. And you're seeing that now. And there's a segment of the fan base that is done on Poile, and they're done on Hines. And I think some of that segment of the fan base was never in on Hines to begin with and didn't give him a fair shake. But I look at it like this. I think David was very, very honest when he said, he looked at John and then he looked at the media and he said, I didn't give him all the tools to be successful. And I totally 100% agree and believe that. I think that this team overachieved, but I think part of hitting the wall down the stretch was just the depth isn't as developed yet. And I do think that there's something to the young players that have never gone through 82 games. Geno hit a wall. I mean, it just, there's no other way to put that. And now how do you fix that? Can John and his staff and the strength and conditioning staff, can they work with a player like Geno to grow and develop further to be able to make it through 82 games? I would say the answer is probably yes. And you'll see a better Tanner Geno that will take care of himself a little bit better because now he knows what to expect next year. And same with some other players. Carrier is another example of that, of a young player that I thought did a fine job but had never experienced that 82-game slate before.
I actually thought he handled it pretty well.
For the most part, yeah.
For the most part. And then you had a guy like Yakov Trenin who hit a wall, but then had a resurgent playoff
in the
series.
Playoffs. The thing is,
so there's, again, different guys, you have sort of different evaluations.
And you have to also recognize what they are. Like what, you know, I mean, I think Carrier has gone from being a career AHL defenseman, and that's what he was going to be, a fringe NHL guy, to he's an everyday in the lineup guy. He's not top pair, but I think he can have moments where he's playing, you know, the second pair in defense, you know, a solid third guy if he needs to be. But he's finding his role. and the coaches are figuring out what his role is. And so I, you know, that's going to continue to develop. Same with Fabbro. Again, I don't think Fabbro is this elite top pair Yossi type defenseman, but he doesn't have to be. It's just figuring out what the role is. Now they got to get deeper on defense, just like they have to find a true second line forward that is going to be able to complement the first line, and that's going to be up to David. Now the second part of all this, and I know you guys talked about it, but I asked the question, you know, do you look outside to get new ideas? And David was very quick to say yes, and that it was the right question to ask, and that he would, because I think that is important, that you recognize, especially somebody that's done it as long as he has. He's been here 25 years. He's built this thing from the beginning. It's not that you get complacent or comfortable. It's just sometimes you need new ideas. I mean, as I have taken over in my role, I mean, I still talk to people outside of this building because I need new ideas. I mean, that's just a part of it. You continue to grow because you're constantly asking around. And he addressed, you know, they brought in different scouts and changed some of that up. So I think that that's where, if this is the direction that they're going, where they're staying with this group, which it would appear that they are, then you kind of have to let it work now. The ownership has said, David Poyle's our guy, John Hines is our guy, we've extended him. So now you've got to continue this process, even though the fan base may be a little restless and not want to do that.
Right, but I think the quote you mentioned with David Poyle is an important one. I didn't give him the tools to be more successful, but that was by design, and they told you they couldn't. They had to rework the roster. When you trade Victor Arvidsson for draft picks and you trade Ryan Ellis for younger players, you know there's going to be – they knew in 2020 they had to make over the roster. That was a broken team. And so some of that's by design. And remember, they didn't try to add pieces at the deadline to close the gap. They were just going to sink or swim with the young guys and sort of evaluation. So now the key is moving forward from there, evaluating, getting your evaluation plus maybe some new ideas going forward to make it better. Let's check in on the text line here. Elijah, what do you got?
Real quick, we can throw in one from Craig. He said, I think going through it will help the young players, but I'm still worried about the style Hines wants to play. We are big and strong, but come playoff time, when the boys are tired, speed from other teams is deadly.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You can look at that two ways, because I look at Carolina and I look at even Colorado. Speed teams, right? Blazing speed. Swarming teams. As the playoffs go on, it's also harder to play that way without losing a bit of a gear. So that's something to watch for. Now, Connor McDavid's not slowing down. Connor McDavid's, you know, playing at a different level.
But Connor McDavid is in his own, he's in a different world.
But so he's elevating them, and their speed is getting the best of Calgary, a team that's built more like Nashville, a team that wants to grind and play physical. Right now, Calgary, it's gone back and forth, right? It looked for a while that Calgary's on the verge of taking full control and going up 2-0. All of a sudden, Connor McDavid takes over. They flip game 2 and then dominate game 3. Now, it could go back around the other way before it's over. So it's a tough answer. So that's a double-edged sword, the speed. Can you play with the speed that you want for 4 rounds? And I don't think Makar and McKinnon look as fast as they did in the first round.
It's finding the balance.
It's hard to do. It's finding the balance.
They got to find the balance. And that's why, you know, I use the comparison of finding a, in his prime, Corey Perry-type player that could be on that second line. And I'm not saying go sign Corey Perry, just somebody similar to that is going to be tough but can be speedy when he needs to be.
And he's really a fourth liner, but he's playing great.
Well, I'm talking about in his prime. Like you find the Corey Perry of the Anaheim days that we hated.
Oh, yeah. Well,
absolutely despise, but that's the kind of player you need.
Right, and he was elite at that time. But he's been a perfect complimentary guy, too, at this stage of his career. Last year with the Canadiens and this year.
But I think you have those guys. Like, whether you bring Cousins back or, you know, you can go find those guys. But it's finding that Corey Perry in his prime elite type player that can be in your top six.
All right. When we come back to Ron Davenport, we'll switch gears. We'll talk a little bit of football. Stay tuned. This is the DDC on 102.5 The Game.